Everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them. Now, if you're in the mood for chalupas, we're the ones to show you how.
This is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. And I'm on a road trip right now. Something really unusual has happened. For me, I'm ahead of schedule. I'm meeting some friends, but I guess I got a mix-up on when we were going to leave, and I ended up being a couple hours early. And if you know me, I'm never early. I had a friend who was consistently late to everything. Late, even when it was really important. And it was frustrating, but it got to the point where we would just tell him, hey, you know, we need you there at noon, and tell everybody else we need you there at 1:30, because we knew that Rhett would get there at the same time. So I am just driving around. There are these little towns down here that, you know, some of it looks more modern, but some of it was clearly built in like the 1950s, and it has that, what do you call it? Well, it just has that feel to it. It feels like it, and it's charming. And the little town I'm driving through right now is, I don't want to use this word because it's an arrogant word. And I don't think I'm better than any of these people. In fact, I'm sure most of them are much happier than I am. But it is quaint. Anyhow, I'm on their little main street at a stoplight. Just got to make sure. 67 miles on this road. But I'm going slow. Oh, geez. Some of this stuff is just really, really neat, though. And because it's remote, you don't get a lot of TV shows or movies or anything like that shot here. But if they did, you could have a movie set in the 60s and not have to do much. Like, I'm just passing a building. It says established 1916. It says Rexall Drugs on it. And in my dad's childhood, you could probably pass a place that looked like that, that said Rexall Drugs on it. And on the other side of the road here is a school. And yeah, this school was probably built while... Oh, geez, it's not a school anymore. But it was a school at one point. I was going to say during the Roosevelt administration or something. Anyhow, that stuff is quaint. And that has nothing to do with why I'm recording this today or why you're here, except for that I have extra time. I'm not in a hurry. I don't have anybody waiting for me saying, gosh, where is he? And I haven't gotten lost yet. I will, but it hasn't happened yet. So I figured I'd do another Rish Outcast. And I'm actually going to present a story in this episode. And the story is called... That's funny. It starts with a U. I can't remember what it's called. Gosh, I want to say unusual combination, but that's not right. Oh, that sucks. Well, let me just play the story, and we can talk about it on the other side. It's not a long story. I won't feel the need to break it up in two episodes or anything like that. And, you know, I don't feel terrible when I do an episode that doesn't have a story. I used to, but I've done it so many times that it's like, well, listen, guys, I try to have more episodes and try and do them like every couple weeks. But if it's a story episode, if it's a story presentation episode, it's going to take longer. So there'll be fewer of those. But yeah, I think this one is called Unexpected Combination, Unusual Ingredients. Now, Big wrote a story called The Usual Ingredients. Okay, let me just run the story and we will talk. Enjoy!
unique combination. After picking up my son Alec and his two best friends from their Magic the Gathering game, they insisted on getting a soda at the local Gas & Go, and were so loud about it that I didn't even argue. Alan and Mike were 14, and Cody was 13, and they sounded like a half dozen or more back there, chattering, laughing, somehow both mumbling and yelling. It had once been fun to do things with my son and his friends, but those days were gone. This was a chore, a drudgery, a whatever the next level after drudgery was. A punishment, maybe. One of them snorted in the back of the car. Damn kids.
Dad!
The boy shouted, almost comically loud. What? I asked, spinning around in my seat. I was on edge. Hell, Mother Teresa would have been with all this noise from all these kids.
I can't believe you said that.
Said what?
That you wished we were dead.
There was hurt on Alan's face, along with the usual outrage. That I never said that.
Yes, you did. Just a second ago.
You're imagining things.
Mike.
Mike was hesitant. Then he shrugged. He said he couldn't wait until we were dead. I swallowed.
Little shits, you said,
my son clarified. Whoops. I couldn't believe I had said that aloud. I must be losing my mind.
Yeah, maybe,
the boy muttered. Maybe what?
Maybe you're losing your mind.
My back went rigid. I definitely hadn't said that. I had only thought it.
No, I heard you, my son insisted. We all heard you.
Are you hearing me now? I thought, but didn't say. All three boys said,
yes.
Yes.
Well, I didn't say anything. I just thought it.
I heard his thoughts,
Cody exclaimed. Simply believing it, impossible though it was.
Can you read mine?
Mike asked, concentrating.
Dude!
Cody laughed, and proceeded to utter the vilest word in the English language.
That's totally it, Mike said proudly.
I heard it too,
my son boasted.
Let me try, Mike said, looking at the others. When, was the last time you wet the bed?
Neither of them answered, but Cody laughed hard, and Mike said,
Not bad, Cody.
I was glad they hadn't asked me. I'd befouled the bed one night during the last fall, right around the start of football season.
Oh, gross,
Mike shouted, and my son all but screamed,
Dad, that's disgusting.
All three boys could read minds.
How did this happen?
My son asked. At the same time, I wondered how we could use this to our advantage. At a casino or something.
We're 14, Mike told me, scoldingly.
Good point,
I thought. And he apparently heard me.
It started as soon as we got back in the car, Alan decided.
I hadn't gone into the service station. I had been filling up the tank. I tried to figure it out. Did something happen in the gas station? Anything, I don't know, spray on you or you take drugs or something?
None of us use drugs,
Mike said, as though the very idea were ridiculous.
He doesn't believe us, Cody muttered. We all drank the same soda, Alan said. That must be it.
A mind-reading soda, I asked, intrigued. Mountain Dew was always putting out new flavors. What was it?
All of them. We got a little bit of each. It's called a suicide.
I vaguely remembered something like that from my childhood. But that could have been what you called it when you mixed everybody's booze at a party.
You drank when you were our age?
Asked Mike. No, I lied. Alan said.
Dad, they call it a suicide because it's super gross.
I turned the car around. I drove all the way back to the Gas and Go, parking in the handicapped spot in front, and insisted my son come in with me. I got a 16-ounce cup and began mixing the disgusting concoction. Did you put diet in there, too? I asked, dreading the answer.
Yep.
That's horrible. I almost wished they had taken drugs. I could at least see the appeal in that.
I'm going back to the car, Dad,
the boy said, and before I could argue, he was gone. I continued down the line of sodas. One of the dispensers was running low. It had a blinking red light on it. Was it before? Did they skip that one? I put a bit of it into my cup, even though it was supposed to be cola-colored, and it came out clear. I took a deep sip of my concoction. It tasted like sugar and chemicals and more sugar.
Hey, buddy, you gonna pay for that?
I turned. The clerk, a beefy guy with a beard and what looked like a bowling team shirt, was standing in front of the counter, trying to intimidate me. There was no other explanation for it. Did you say that, or only think it?
Huh? I said, you gonna pay for that, or just chug and go?
Sure. I took another sip, a longer one, swallowing, and tried to imagine drinking half a gallon of this stuff. I was barely able to keep from shuddering. The clerk went around his counter and pushed a couple of buttons on the cash register.
Buck 21, he said, bored again.
I gave him $2 bills. I was getting nothing from this guy. I felt no different, aside from slightly queasy from the bad soda. Could you think about something? I asked the stranger. He gave me my change.
What?
Just think. I concentrated. Nothing.
Think? Are you threatening me, man?
No, I just wanted you to...
Some dipshit comes in here once a month at least, most of the time unarmed, wanting me to empty the register.
Really? Once a month? That seemed extraordinary. There was no way they paid this guy enough to deal with that kind of thing. No wonder he had a hostile streak to him. Why don't you get another job? He leaned forward, maybe 5 inches.
Why don't you stop being a faggot?
I glared at him. I was pretty sure he had spoken the words rather than thought them, but that was pretty darn offensive to say to a customer in the 21st century. Look, I said, there were 3 boys in here a minute ago. They all got mixed fountain drinks, and I...
Are you a pedo, too? Man, I ought to get a picture of you for the wall.
No, I'm just saying. He gestured behind him with a beefy, hair-covered arm.
The wall's got people who are banned from the store. We print out pictures from the security camera.
Hey, I'm not threatening you. I just...
Get out of here, he muttered.
I turned to go.
Of course, we got another wall in the back, with pictures of hotties that come in here. The ones that use the bathroom, especially.
I froze. Was he still talking?
Think I might go back there right now and stretch the Twizzler.
I had turned back. He wasn't speaking now, not even looking in my direction.
What?
He said, looking up at me.
Oh, this fucktard is going to try to rob me. I knew it.
I'm going to get another soda, I said, gritting my teeth at being called a fucktard, if only in his head.
No, no, you get out of here, or I'm calling the cops.
Hey, you call the cops, and I'll tell them about the camera you've got in the bathroom. It was his turn to freeze.
There's no camera in the... How could he know?
He thought.
I hit it real good.
The women's restroom, dude, I said. Not sure how you get away with that.
Owner's my uncle, and he's got fucking diabetes, so he doesn't come in,
thought the guy. But so quick, I barely caught it. I'm getting an extra large soda, and you're going to keep your mouth and your brain shut, okay? I said, grabbing a big refill cup off the rack. $5.99, I thought aloud. And you called me a thief?
Take it. I squint off in those. The cashier thought, then turned to the cigarette case to hide his smirk.
I figured I'd have to make an anonymous call about this guy. But first, I put the refill mug back on the rack and got an extra large paper cup from the dispenser. I walked out without paying for my drink, listening to that scumbag's thoughts the whole time. Turns out he made 50 grand a year jockeying that register, since he also sold a few specialty products out of the back. His name was Cleon, like Leon, but spelled wrong. I'd have to remember that. The kids were all laughing when I got back to the car, though not saying anything aloud.
Wow, my son said. You did it too, Dad?
Yep, so stop thinking about boobies, I said good-naturedly. I was in a fine mood now that I was out of there.
Alan's mom has boobies,
Cody thought, and the boys laughed, though Alan a little less. Sorry, Cody said aloud. That's all right, I retorted. She does have boobies.
You should have seen them before she had kids, I regretted thinking.
So what are we going to do with this?
Mike asked the other two.
Tonight?
Alan wondered.
What can we do?
I think a trip to Vegas wouldn't be the worst idea, I said from the driver's seat. The three boys paid me no mind.
Slumber party,
one of them, I think Cody, thought.
Oh, yeah, right,
Alan thought back. Their thoughts were bouncing back and forth so fast I couldn't follow them. It sounded, as lame as that is, that they wanted to have some kind of sleepover tonight.
Okay, Dad,
Alan said aloud.
We want you to take us up to Locust Lane.
Locust Lane? That was the big winding road that overlooked the rest of town, where all the rich folks lived and looked down on everybody else. Alan didn't even lie about it.
We're going to crash a slumber party at Brianna Van Scupp's house.
I just stared at him. Be honest, I said, looking at all three boys. Did you know this was going to happen? Is that why you wanted to come here so badly? All three went quiet then, and I got a deluge of thoughts from the youths.
I couldn't imagine this happening.
I don't know.
Not to nobody.
I was just thirsty.
I can't even believe it right now.
Okay, I said, waving my hands like to shoo away flies. Stop thinking, please. I turned the key to start the car, but the engine was already going, and it made an awful grinding sound. Whoops. I shifted into reverse, and we were on our way.
How long will this last?
My son asked aloud, and his thoughts followed with fear it would wear off before he had a chance to have fun with it.
I just hope I can use it to score with Lynn Walker,
Mike thought.
Score?
I thought.
He's just 14.
So?
Mike thought back.
You haven't seen Lynn Walker.
And I got a picture of the most perfect 5-foot-tall drill team twirler the world could ever know. It was attached to such unbridled teenage frustration that I nearly got blue balls by association.
Okay.
I thought and said at the same time. I wondered if the vision I'd just seen was how she actually looked, or some kind of fantasy version of a pretty teenage classmate.
What if this never wears off?
Cody worried, then continued in his mind.
What if I know what everybody thinks about me everywhere I go?
I thought maybe he wasn't so dumb after all.
See?
He said glumly.
Even Mr. Croft thinks I'm dumb.
You are dumb.
Both Mike and Alan thought in a harmony that was almost eerie. Look, I said with confidence I did not feel. Let's proceed on the assumption that this effect will wear off, like a sugar rush or a caffeine high. What's the best way to use it while it lasts?
Lynn Walker,
Mike thought dreamily.
I'm with Mike,
Alan agreed in his head.
Though doesn't she have an older, hotter sister? Right, Cody said. Beezer Davis went down on her at the Big Miller's Fork game.
Beezer Davis is gay,
Mike thought quietly. You'd think that was a misnomer, but it turns out there are loud thoughts and not so loud ones. Then Mike thought,
shit, don't listen to me. He's not gay.
Then,
but he is.
Alan spoke up.
Who cares? Do you really think mind reading can help us score with girls?
It would certainly help with your mother, I thought, but didn't intend for them to hear.
But you're only 14. Do you really think about sex with girls already? No, Alan lied.
And all three boys thought about how often sex crossed their minds. Holy diarrhea. I couldn't remember it being like that. How could you get anything done? Suddenly, I remember being in 10th grade, sitting next to Allison Martinez in geography class, nearly out of my mind with the closeness of her. I'd stare at her legs, her neck, her chest, and have to fight off the almost overpowering need to start touching, start kissing. Wow, I hadn't thought of that in 20 years.
Yeah, it's like that,
Cody said aloud.
Right,
Alan agreed, embarrassed.
You're all right, Mr. C,
Cody added. I pulled the car onto Locust Lane, where every house had a fence and a second story, and those lights that came on when you stepped on the property. None of this had been here when I was a kid, and when it first got developed, we had been too poor to buy any of the lots.
Did you ever get anywhere with that girl?
Mike wondered, bringing me back to the mental conversation.
Shit, no,
I thought. I did feel her up one time, but that ended mighty quick once she realized who I was.
Dad!
Alan both said and thought.
All right, I said. Take the spotlight off me for a minute. Everybody think of the worst thing you've ever done.
Immediately, I caught a barrage of words and images that I did my best to ignore.
That's the house, Cody thought excitedly.
The one on the left, Mike said, but didn't have to. I knew what their destination was.
You boys sure about this?
I asked. But it was just an empty gesture. Their minds were made up, and it actually impressed me in a strange way.
Yes,
two said, and one thought. So I pulled the car to a stop, not in front of What's-Her-Name's house, but in front of the neighbor's. Give me a call when you need a ride home, I said. Or you need someone to make bail, I added silently. They all laughed and filed out of the vehicle. My mind-reading abilities wore off about an hour after that, which made me think my son's would be wearing off around the same time. I pitied him, but hoped he got somewhere with the time he'd been given. Me, I still had a 48-ounce suicide drink, which was warm and flat, but hopefully still potent enough for me to work my bit of revenge and help myself in the process. Yep. I found out that Benjamin Kiefer had stolen thousands of dollars worth of inventory over the last 3 years, and even got Anthony Kespo written up for losing part of a shipment. That was interesting news. Unless you think I was 100% self-serving, I discovered that Andy McKee had been depressed lately since his sister got remarried and only wanted to know he was needed and appreciated, and I was able to convey that to him. Not bad for $1.21. The end.
Well, okay, there is that. You've heard the story. It's not, anything mind-blowing. It's not a story that's going to win any awards. But it is, it was fun to write. It's one of those stories that Big and I each wrote with a similar theme. Not exactly a broken mirror story, but I told him when I was a kid, sometimes my friends and I would go to the soda fountain, the gas station, and we would mix all the drinks together. And he said, oh yeah, we'd do that too. We called it a suicide. And I said, yeah, I did too. I wonder why it was called that. And neither of us knew, except for, I'm sure it tasted really foul. But I said, you know, I was thinking about maybe we should write a story about that. And he did. And he told me it wasn't even really a story. It was just something really short. It looked practically a drabble. And he never let me read it. I didn't press him. That's okay. You know, if he's not thrilled with it, then that's okay. I understand. There are stories I'm not thrilled with. I'm not thrilled with this one. But I knew if I recorded it that I might be able to have a little bit of fun with the voices. Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, there's nothing particularly cool about this story. It's just something small that I wrote. And, you know, I've got a friend, and he said that his goal for 2016 was to write 4 stories. It might have been 5, but maybe it was 4 or 5 stories. But I tend to write more than that, especially when I push myself. And yeah, I pushed myself this year. I don't know how many stories I wrote. But a little story like this is nothing. It didn't take a lot of work. But it's still an accomplishment when you write a story, you finish it. I've got too many stories under my belt to feel too proud of myself when I finish a story, but every single story that I finish is a small accomplishment because there are so many hundreds of stories out there that I've started and then never finished. I've talked before about people that I know who write a story a week or publish a story a week. They put them out there. They podcast a story a week, and how grand that is. What a great accomplishment that is. How envious I am of people that are capable of that. But a story like this one, that should be doable. I should be able to write something like this in 7 days, every 7 days. The problem is finding ideas for stories, having, if I were to try and write 52 stories in a year or 50 stories in a year, it would be difficult to come up with 50 story ideas that had enough gas in them to get me to the end. I feel like I'm trying to explain the creative process in a scientific kind of way, or in a, you know, mechanical instruction manual sort of way. Inspiration comes in many ways. A lot of times, you know, you're just driving or running or waiting and you think of something. Sometimes people will say something and you use that as a springboard. Big used to tell me these stories about, like, his wife talking in her sleep, or his wife becoming obsessed with exercise, or something that his wife said about one of her employees at work, or I mean, I used to hit that as 3 examples because he would tell me these stories and I'd be like, wow, that's a perspective I don't have. I don't have a wife who, you know, is excited to tell me about her hard day at work at the end of the day. And so those were springboards to stories that I wrote. Most of the time, my stories are about teenagers or about loser uncles. And you can guess why. But every once in a while, I will stretch and it will have a female protagonist who's either a little girl or a grown woman or a girl teen. And those are always a little trickier because I'm afraid of getting something wrong. I've had somebody say on one of those stories, you know, that it didn't sound genuine. And yeah, I don't really know what teenage girls are like. And it's just so much easier to write about something that I have been. But, you know, someday I'd like to do that sort of thing where I say, okay, you know, it's January 2017 and I'm going to do 50 podcasts this year. So that's 1 every single week. And I'm probably going to miss 1 in July and miss 1 in October or something like that. But that I think I could manage if I didn't have to do a story every single episode. And, you know, something like this, which is really small, I should be able to do. But again, the production aspect takes time. This thing that I'm doing right now, just recording while I'm driving, is easy. And it takes no time because my time is already occupied with something else. It's like the people that have a job where they can write or they can blog or they can listen to music or YouTube or I don't know. They're stuck where they are in their job. They have to be there, and so that they can do two things at the same time. They can do their job. Say you were a security guard or a receptionist or something like that, but at the same time you could write or read or do Sudoku. And I don't know. I'm a little bit dissatisfied with this story because it is too short. Because, like, what happens to the boys when they crash the sleepover with the ability to read minds? In a lot of ways, I never matured past that age. And that sort of thing is still interesting to me, you know? What would I do if I were 14 or 15 or 16 and had some kind of special ability? A leg up, if you will. And then the dad, the main character, he sums up in about a paragraph what happened with the drink, the suicide drink. And that probably could have taken up a few pages as well. I think I just ran out of juice on that one. And I could either have just abandoned the story halfway done or done what I did, which is just summarize and say, oh, this is what happened to the end. And I don't know that there's anything wrong with that. It probably would have been a better story with a conventional narrative there at the end. And then I could have introduced, you know, his corrupt co-workers, people that had always been jerks to him, that sort of thing, which he's able to turn the tables on. I think that would be fun. But I didn't. And, you know, until I am killed in a car accident... Oh, no, that's big. Until I am killed in a bizarre electric toothbrush accident, I could always write that if I wanted to. I could always expand this to a, you know, 15,000-word story and call it In the Mix or something like that. That was one of the titles that I kicked around for this one. I never really liked the title. Like, All Mixed Up, I think, Can You Read My Mind? You know, the Superman 1978 song, because I like to do song titles. You know, these were just titles that I kicked around. And if I wanted to do a whole story based on that, I have all those options for titles. I just passed a place called the Galaxy Diner. And it's got, I don't know, that it's a statue, you know, but it's a figurine about 3 feet tall of a girl a waitress? You know, a 50s diner waitress kind of thing. She's got a platter in one hand, a tray in one hand, and like her bottom in the other hand, and roller skates on. And it was called the Galaxy Diner. It just kind of neat, all this stuff. But I think I'm going to let you go. That was a short episode, and, you know, still most of it was me talking rather than the story itself. But I hope you enjoyed it. And, you know, if you didn't enjoy it, there's probably more to come, and maybe one of those you will enjoy. I mean, if you really didn't enjoy it, then probably you shouldn't keep listening to the show, because, you know, it's going to be more of this sort of thing. Anywho, you have a great afternoon, or if it's evening where you are, one of those two. And I leave you. I've been Rish Outfield. Good night.
The podcast you have just listened to was produced under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, no derivatives license. Share it while you still have the chance. The music in this episode was created by Kevin MacLeod, whose shenanigans can be found over at incompetech.com. And remember, there's a Patreon page out there if you'd like to throw a dollar or two my way. I must be dreaming.
When was the last time you wet the bed? I was glad they hadn't asked me. I'd befouled the bed one night during the last fall. Jesus. I don't care, dude. What I think is funny is what I think is funny.